This is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, celebrating the African-American spirit here on WUBS, sponsored by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Stay with us for the 10-week series on the life and love and creation of African-American music in America.
Talked about shows you born.
This is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, celebrating the African American spirit, brought to you, sponsored by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra, and here at WUBS. We're going to start with part two of our session on spirituals. Last week we talked about the creation of these wonderful songs. Today we're going to talk a little bit about and listen to choral arrangements. For the most part, it should be remembered that the spirituals were created by the community, not by an individual composer, and that no dates and times can be given for their creation. The spirituals evolved as slavery and the abolitionist movement developed to the reality of emancipation. The spirituals, as we hear them today, came to us through the efforts of William Francis Allen, Charles Pickard Ware, and Lucy McKim Garrison, that first collected these songs and published these songs in 1867. The book Slave Songs in the United States, published by Peter Smith in 1929, contained 136 examples of music, all of it without harmony, and scribed in the Western European notation, reflecting the meters and rhythms as they were actually sung. One of the things about the spirituals that we hear today is that they are not like those that were sung out in the field. The Africans had a pentatonic scale, which is five notes. The Western Europeans had a seven-note scale. So they had to merge the two scales together to make these sounds come together. And it was in the words of William Francis Allen, who says, "The best we can do, however, with paper and types, or even with voices, will convey but a faint shadow of the original. The voices of the colored people have a peculiar quality that nothing can imitate. And the intonations and delicate variations of even one cannot be reproduced on paper." And so these people gathered these songs together, and then African-American composers began to concertize them, as well as the Fisk Jubilee Singers, who began singing these songs as early as 1871. And we're going to hear the Fisk Jubilee Singers now in the rendition of the spiritual Daniel, Servant of the Lord, by the African-American woman composer Undine Smith Moore.
One Hebrew Daniel was found. They put him in the lion's den.
He stayed there all night long.
The king cried, "Oh, Daniel, oh, Daniel,
oh, about the Hebrew Daniel,
servant of the Lord."
Now the king in sleep was troubled. Early in the morning he rose to find God has sent his angel down
to love the
listening to the Fisk Jubilee Singers, singing Daniel, Daniel, Servant of the Lord by Undine Smith Moore. Fisk University is very important in our discussion about the spirituals because Fisk University opened in Nashville, Tennessee in 1866 as the first American university to offer a liberal arts education to young men and women irrespective of color. 5 years later, the school was in dire straits. George L. White, Fisk treasurer and music professor, and White created a 9-member choral ensemble of students who many of them had been ex-slaves, and took it on tour to earn money for the university. The group left campus on October 6, 1871, and is now known as Jubilee Day at Fisk University. The first concerts were in small towns. Surprise, curiosity, and some hostility with the early audience response to these young black singers who did not perform in the traditional minstrel fashion. And we need to talk about minstrels a little bit here. The image of African Americans had been portrayed, as we talked about last week, through the Jim Crow dances and singing and blackface of white men and women who performed exaggerated characterizations of black people. And so theater being the only form of entertainment for a lot of people, there was no television, radio, or things like that back in these days, only saw these people on stage acting and dressing in these exaggerated costumes and big lips, big eyes, and hairstyles. And they represented what they thought were what black people were all about. So if you did not do the minstrel show kind of thing, as later on called the Jim Crow kind of songs, and acting, that was what people viewed as being black. So if you didn't do that, you couldn't get a job. Even some black people had to dress up in those outfits and those costumes and put blackface on their black faces to become people in entertainment. And so America was used to seeing this minstrel caricature, funny, sometimes ludicrous characterization of black people. And so when the Fisk Jubilee Singers first started, they were not the tradition that white America was looking for. One early concert in Cincinnati brought in $50, which was promptly donated to the victims of the Chicago fire of that same year, 1871. When they reached Columbus, the next city on tour, the students were physically and emotionally drained. Mr. White, in a gesture of hope and encouragement, named them the Jubilee Singers, a biblical reference to the year of Jubilee in the book of Leviticus, chapter 25. Continued perseverance and beautiful voices began to change attitudes among the predominantly white audiences. Eventually, skepticism was replaced by standing ovations and critical praise and reviews. Gradually, they earned enough money to cover expenses and send back to Fisk. In 1872, they sang at the World Peace Festival in Boston, and at the end of the year, President Ulysses S. Grant invited them to perform at the White House. In 1873, the group grew to 11 members and toured Europe for the first time. Funds raised that year were used to construct the school's first permanent building known as Jubilee Hall. Today, it is designated as a National Historic Landmark. It is one of the oldest structures on the campus. The beautiful Victorian Gothic building houses a floor-to-ceiling portrait of the original Jubilee Singers commissioned by, of all people, Queen Victoria during their 1873 tour as a gift from England to Fisk. And because of these young singers, these songs became more popular. And as this continued, as we know later on, in 1893, Anton Dvorak came to America at the request of a woman to start a National Conservatory of Music. He worked with a young man named Harry T. Burley, an African-American from Erie, Pennsylvania, who began to talk with Dvorak about the music and sing for him. And it was Dvorak in 1893 who said that the American Negro Indian folk music would serve as the nationalistic school of music in the United States. From there, other African-American composers began to take these songs and work with them and create concert versions that could be sung by schools, by churches, and by the world. And we're going to hear another one of those wonderful concert songs by one of the great composers of those songs. But before we hear that, I want to explain the song we're going to hear, which is called Ezekiel Saw the Wheel. Ezekiel Saw the Wheel is part of a ring shout tradition. The verse that says, you better mind your brother how you walk on the cross. Your foot might slip and your soul get lost. gives reference to where the shout occurred and specific instructions of what to do while shouting. The first line of the text in this portion of the song refers to the front of the church where the pews are pulled back to the side. A group of shouters form a circle that moves counterclockwise, and a group of singers form off to the side to provide the music. While the pews pull back, the circle is positioned at the point of the church called the nave or the cross, where one aisle interacts with the other. The next portion of the text, "Your foot might slip and your soul get lost," refers to the shouters of the church's belief of differences between sacred and secular dance. Secular dance takes the feet up off the ground, while sacred dance maintains the feet are on the ground in contact with the earth. The conference, the idea of the wheel, the reference to the wheel and a wheel, as they are correlated with the nature of the shout being a circle, focuses our minds on being more than a triplet song. We see a philosophical connection between God and man and direct contact with the earth. The shout should start with a slow tempo and gradually get faster and faster. William Dawson, in his arrangement, begins with just a solo line and a chorus, but the conclusion of the work has the Duma Lumas, which you will hear, as a way to increase the tempo. In a folk sense, the music for the shout is generally in call and response form, and as the shout progresses, different soloists take over the role as leader. As the tension for the liturgical drama increases, the shout becomes so fast that the words and phrases are no longer important, but the concept of call and response remains as the central focus of the musical element. Ezekiel Saw the Wheel by the Tuskegee Choir, led by William Dawson.
Ezekiel saw the wheel way up in the middle of the air. Ezekiel saw the wheel way in the middle of the air. Ezekiel saw the wheel way up in the middle of the air. Ezekiel saw the wheel way in the middle of the air.
Ezekiel saw the wheel.
Ezekiel Saw the Wheel, performed by the Tuskegee Institute Choir, William Dawson, the composer of that piece, conducting. Other resources that African-American composers used included Nathaniel Dett's Religious Folk Song of the Negro, as sung at Hampton Institute, published in 1927, J. Rosamond and J. Weldon Johnson's The Book of Negro Spirituals, Volume 1 and 2, published in 1925 and 1926, John W. Work's American Negro Songs and Spirituals, published in 1940, W.C. Handy's Blues and Anthology, Complete Words and Music of 53 Great Songs in 1926, and Roland Hayes' My Songs, published in 1940. These published spirituals were written for concert use and performed quite extensively by many choirs. However, the tragedy of these concerts is that the average American did not attend choral or classical concerts. The average American, as I stated before, attended minstrel shows, which featured white men in blackface, performing a caricature of Africans. Skits about Southern life with slaves as darkies who were happy to serve their masters and who played jokes on each other and themselves and spoke with exaggerated speech. In these shows, sausage and spirituals were introduced to American audiences who saw them only as popular entertainment. However, for us African Americans, we did not see them as popular entertainment. We saw these as the song of the people. It can be noted that you could hear a spiritual in one part of the country and it will sound completely different in another part of the country. And one example of that, of course, is Go Down Moses. There are 25 verses to Go Down Moses as published by the Fish Jubilee Singers, where we only sing two or three or four. Today we're going to listen to two versions of the same song. Mary Had a Baby. We're going to hear a version that most people hear are familiar with, by William Dawson, again, and the Tuskegee Choir, Mary Had a Baby. Sung by the Tuskegee Institute Choir. There's another version of Mary Had a Baby, and we're going to listen to that version now. This is the Fayetteville State University Choir singing the arrangement by Uzi Brown, a different tune of Mary Had a Baby. Mary Had a Baby, the composer, arranger, Uzi Brown Jr. at Morehouse College, Fayetteville State University singers performing. So you've heard now two versions of Mary Had a Baby, one in the major key, one in the minor key. And so the spirituals can have different tunes that yet the same words. Speaking of words, talk a little bit about dialect. The dialect, which is a historical style, is part of the spiritual tradition. The enslaved Africans received no formal education. In fact, they were prevented by law from being taught to read or write. So the language they spoke and sang was developed by ear. Many of the West African languages spoken by the enslaved did not contain the phonetic th, th sound. Thus, words that begin with th have a hard d or T sound. For example, that, than, and the became dat, dan, and duh. And words like thick or thin became tick or tin. With, with became wid. R's are sometimes suppressed. Lord becomes laud, L-A-W-D. Never becomes never. And going shows up as gwine, G-W-I-N-E. Pronunciation of the vowels, however, often follows the rules of English. D is used preceding words that begin with vowels, while da and da are used preceding words that begin with consonants. In the book of American Negro Spirituals by Johnson and the Johnson Brothers, this is all explained. The dialect of the rhythm of the spiritual songs are part of the rhythm as part of the African language. In William Dawson's Soon It Will Be Done With the Troubles of the World, or I Got a Crown Up Into That Kingdom, Into That Good News, does not translate rhythmically to soon I will be finished with the troubles of the world, or I have a crown up in the kingdom, isn't that good news? The dialect is an integral facet of the compositions and should be given the respect we generally give to foreign languages. Therefore, as I learned as a young man, I should not be embarrassed by the language of the spirituals, but should embrace it as part of my heritage. Hall Johnson, one of the great composers and arrangers of spirituals, created a work in the style of a spiritual, call and response style, which we're going to listen to right now. A very famous piece, one of my favorites, using the dialect, Ain't Got Time to Die.
Lord, I keep so busy praising my Jesus.
Keep so busy praising my Jesus. Keep so busy praising my Jesus. Ain't got time to die.
Lord, when I'm healing the sick,
I'm praising my Jesus.
When I'm healing the sick,
I'm praising my Jesus.
When I'm healing the sick,
I'm praising my Jesus. Ain't got time to die. Cause it takes all of my time to praise my Jesus. All of my time to praise my Lord. If I don't praise Him, the rock's going to cry out, glory and honor, glory and honor. Ain't got time to die.
Lord, I keep so busy working for the kingdom.
Keep so busy working for the kingdom. Keep so busy working for the kingdom. Ain't got time to die.
Cause when I'm feeding the poor,
I'm working for the kingdom.
When I'm feeding the poor,
I'm working for the kingdom.
When I'm feeding the poor,
I'm working for the kingdom. Ain't got time to die. Cause it takes all of my time to praise my Jesus. All of my time to praise my Lord. If I don't praise Him, the wrath's going to cry out, glory and honor.
Lord, I keep so busy serving my Master.
Keep so busy serving my Master. Keep so busy serving my Master. Ain't got time to die.
Cause when I'm giving my
all, I'm serving my Master.
When I'm giving my all,
I'm serving my Master.
When I'm giving my all,
I'm serving my Master. Ain't got time to die. Cause it takes all of my time to praise my Jesus. All of my time to praise my Lord. If I don't praise Him, the rocks go to cry out, glory and honor, glory and honor. Ain't got time to die. Now won't you get out of my way? Let me praise my Jesus. Out of my way, let me praise my Lord. If I don't praise Him, the rocks go to cry out, glory and honor, glory and honor. Ain't got time to die. Now won't you get out of my way? Let me praise my Jesus. Out of my way, let me praise my Lord. If I don't praise Him, the rocks going to cry out, glory and honor, glory and honor.
Ain't got time to die.
The Favre State University Concert Choir singing Ain't Got Time to Die by the African-American composer Hall Johnson. There's a talk about whether or not the spiritual has a swing to it. And so Johnson and Johnson brothers wrote in their book, the swing of the spiritual is an altogether subtle and elusive thing. It is subtle and elusive because it is the perfect union with the religious ecstasy that manifests itself in the swaying, bodies of the whole congregation swaying as if responding to the baton of some extremely sensitive conductor. The swing of the spiritual should not be confused with the swing of jazz. The swing of the spiritual is a part of the religious experience of African Americans. It is a feeling, not a notation. And in order to feel it, one must be aware of the history of the music, of the time, and of the struggle. One must study the music of the people and not make assumptions based upon popular entertainment forms that have emphasized stereotypical nuances. One must also get inside the music and attempt to convey the experience. The spiritual should not be confused with jazz, and consequently additions that use the words in a jazzy style are misleading. Swing is an entertainment style, not appropriate in the performance of a spiritual. Just as spiritual should not be confused with jazzy styles, they should also not be confused with gospel styles, which we'll talk about later on. Spirituals and gospels are not the same. Each has its own aesthetic and performance style. So the question comes to us, can white singers and choirs sing spirituals? Johnson and Johnson, the brothers, say this, I think white singers, concert singers can sing spirituals if they feel them. But to feel them is necessary to know the truth about their origin and history, to get in touch with the association of ideas that surround them, and to realize something of what they have meant in the experience of the people who created them. In this word, the capacity to feel these songs while singing them is more important than any amount of mere artistic technique. Singers who take the spirituals as mere art songs and singers who make of them an exhibition of what is merely amusing or exotic are equally doomed to failure, so far as true interpretation is concerned. So even in the orchestral world of concert singers, the spirituals become alive with meaning. And so our final selection of this program will be one of the great spirituals of all time. He's got the whole world in his hands, performed by two of the great opera singers, Kathleen Battle and Jesse Norman. From their spirituals in concert at Carnegie Hall, Andrew Levine conducting the orchestra and chorus and the whole world in his hands. Kathleen Battle and the late Jesse Norman at Carnegie Hall, 1991, Spirituals in Concert, a hold in his hands arranged by Margaret Bond. But here you heard an orchestra, chorus, and a choir performing one of the great works of the African-American tradition. So to understand the African-American spiritual and other forms of African-American music is to begin to understand the life of the African-American. The music represents just not the notes on a page, but also the experience of slavery, reconstruction, segregation, civil rights, Brown versus the Board of Education, political strife, and other aspects of African-American life. This should not be viewed as a detour from standard musical training. It should be a part of standard musical training. Leaving out the spirituals and African-American music deprives students and audiences of the experience of an important and valuable aesthetic. We must elevate the spiritual to its proper place in musical study, considering its performance practices as valuable as those in genres of Western cultural in the Renaissance, Baroque, Classical, and Romantic eras. It will be through studying the spiritual and its history that more authentic performances will be created and the African-American aesthetic better appreciated. Perhaps on this level we can learn something about each other. Perhaps we can learn something about culture, and perhaps we can learn to appreciate the diversity among us. If we begin to move past the spiritual, begin to learn and perform the music of African-American composers, be it the spirituals, or be it the gospel, or be it classical, we will begin to break down the barriers of racial prejudice that still haunt us. Thus, we would create a world that the Africans enslaved sang about a land flowing with milk and honey, with streets covered with gold, holding plenty for everyone. We invite you to listen to this program every Saturday on WUBS as we talk about music of the African-American tradition. Lift Every Voice, Celebrate the African-American Spirit is brought to you by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. And we invite you to a special concert on April the 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Morse Performing Arts Center called The American Composer, which will celebrate three African-American composers: Quinn Mason, who's alive and well, the late Florence Price, and William Dawson. These are orchestral works, and it's the first time in the symphony's 89-year history that they performed a masterworks concert, a regular subscription concert using these pieces of music. It is the beginning of a change in how symphonies perform works of African-American composers. You're invited to that concert on April 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Morse Performing Arts Center, Americans in Concert, or American Composers, I should say. I am Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, Celebrate the African-American Spirit, here on WUBS. Thank you for listening. Next week, we'll talk about Lift Every Voice and Sing.